Hey everybody, this is Brenna Red from The Last Gang, and you're listening to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast.
Is the bomb.
Hey everyone, this is Kristen. Welcome to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast. I am without my co-Mabel Jessica for the beginning of this podcast, but I'm going to make it short anyways because our interview with Miguel Chen of Teenage Bottle Rocket is coming up in just a few minutes, and it's really awesome. He has a new book out called I Want to Be Well, How a Punk Found Peace and You Can Too. And it's interesting when I first read the book, because I'm kind of going through a part, kind of some of this stuff in my own life as well. Like, how can I be more mindful and thoughtful and kind of take care of my body and mind and spirit and all that kind of stuff? And I'm not a religious person, so I have to find other ways that I can kind of tap into, I don't know, a higher power is not the right word, but like find the strength and wisdom and courage within myself to make things in my life better. Actually, it's funny. So when I was in graduate school, I did some research on what's called locus of control. And I don't know if you guys will find this interesting at all, but whatever, I'll just do a quick run through. But it's about like where you identify changes happen and where your power comes from. So you either have an internal locus of control or an external locus of control. So do you feel, so an external locus of control would be you feel that everything around you controls your life, right? Something externally controls your life, other people, perhaps a religion or God or Jesus or whatever you might believe in. Something externally out there controls your life. It's kind of the people that are like, you know, I have a shitty life. There's nothing I can do about it. For me, this is how it feels anyways. It's like the people that blame everyone else for what goes on in their life, right? And I feel that I have an internal locus of control, which is like I'm in control of my life. Everything that happens in my life is because of the choices that I make and the decisions I make and the things that I do and cause and effect and all that kind of stuff. And so I did a lot of research about internal locus of control and people with who feel that they are in control of their own lives and, you know, both the good and the bad, right? Like if something bad happens to me, it was my fault. And what can I do to prevent that from happening next time? Or what can I do to fix it? It's good and bad, right? Like I kind of beat myself up. I'm like, I totally fucked up and what can I do? And I also in graduate school studied, existentialism and nihilism, and which is also all about the choices you make and the consequences they have. Right. So I think punks in general are pretty much existentialists. It's kind of like we are in control of what we do and fuck people who try to tell us what to do. And I think that's why I'm not religious, and I think that's why, I mean, not why I'm not religious, but I'm not religious, and I also believe in existentialism because I do believe that we as humans are in control of our own path and in control of our own lives, and so anyways, I'm just kind of rambling, but the way this ties into Miguel's book, you know, is he's all about, like, these are the things that I've learned and the things that I do to take control of my own life. And a lot of it rung true with me, like, you know, just getting into yoga and being mindful and meditating. Like, I know I need to meditate for sure. Like, I have all these apps on my phone. I don't know if any of you guys have tried meditating, but it's really hard. It's hard just to find that time, like set it aside in the day and say, I'm going to meditate for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever. Just like 2 days ago, I set some alarm on my phone and I was like, every day after breakfast, I'm going to meditate for just 5 minutes. And I haven't done it once. So I don't know. It's like it's something I know I need to do, but it's really hard to just find the time to do it and make it a routine and make it a priority. But Miguel's book is all about making that stuff a priority, right? Like eating well, exercising, doing yoga, being mindful, embracing forgiveness, embracing being present, you know, all of that stuff. And so I got a lot out of Miguel's book. I thought it was really well written. And what's really cool is that at the end of each chapter, you know, he'll write a chapter about listening to his heart, for example, and how is this the one about Brandon? Actually, there's one about, he does talk about Brandon, who was his bandmate in Teenage Bottle Rocket, who passed away a couple years ago. And we talk about this in the interview, how what Brandon was like and his personality, and how he was the kind of guy who did follow his heart and lived life with fun and pleasure, and but also mindfully and smart. And so we talk about that. But my point is that at the end of each chapter, there's kind of like a, he calls it too long, didn't read, which is really funny because each chapter is like 2 pages. And then at the end, there's too long, didn't read. And it's like one paragraph with a really concise summary of the chapter. And then there's also an exercise, actually, or practice, he calls it, like actually something you can do, step-by-step directions for either a yoga pose or meditation or a mindfulness activity. You know, I think that people will really like this book. I think people can get a lot out of it if you really read it and do each of the exercises at the end of each chapter. I've done a few of them. My goal is to do all of them for sure. The other funny thing is that when Jessica and I were reading the book, and there's all the chapters have a lot of punk references in them. There's a chapter called Everything Sucks. There's I Don't Want to Grow Up. What were there was a face-to-face one in there too somewhere. Well, there's Let's Talk About Feelings. So there's all these little like punk references in here that are just awesome. And when we asked Miguel about him in the interview, he was like, you guys are the first ones to ever bring that up that recognize that. And we were like, yes. Which, it was really cool that we found them and noticed them. And he was like, you guys are the first interview that ever mentioned that. So we were kind of proud of ourselves about that. The other thing to know about this interview is that at the end, at the very beginning, Jessica's audio was fucked up, like right from the get-go. She lives in the middle of nowhere in fucking Canada, and her Wi-Fi wasn't working and her connection with us. And it was really frustrating for her because she would try to ask a question and then there would be this huge delay and it would cut in. So at one point she just was like, she texted me as we're interviewing Miguel and she's like, fuck it, I'm just not going to ask any more questions because it breaks up the flow of the interview. And I felt really bad. And then we actually ended up just losing her completely. So basically, this is my intro and my interview with Miguel Chen of Teenage Bottle Rocket. He's super open about his personal life, his relationships, his band. He does talk a little bit about the next steps for Teenage Bottle Rocket and what's coming up. So you'll have to stay to the end of the episode to hear that. But I hope you'll enjoy it. Here is Miguel Chen of Teenage Bottle Rocket talking about his band and also his book, I Want to Be Well, How a Punk Found Peace and You Can Too, which you can find on Amazon. And while you're at it, please give us a rating on iTunes. Please give us 5 stars. It helps us out a lot. Subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, CastBox, Libsyn, all those kinds of places. I hope you enjoy. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Officially, welcome to the podcast. We had a little bit of technical trouble getting started, which is no surprise for us.
Surprise, surprise.
It's one of our goals every single episode to try and make sure that we don't fuck it up, but we do. But we're honest about it.
You should reverse your goals and just try to fuck something up.
Oh, that's true. Put it out there to the universe.
Yeah. Like, what kind of shenanigans will we get into with you? You know?
Yeah. That's so true.
Exactly.
That's so true. Slightly self-deprecating here. So we are super excited to have you here. Kristen and I have both read the book, I Want to Be Well, and we're really excited to talk to you about it.
Right on. I'm really excited to be here.
And congratulations that it's out and it's published.
Thank you so much.
And people are reading it and people are excited about it and giving you great reviews all over different places online. So, well done.
Wow, thank you so much. People seem to like it. I'm happy.
Do people actually ever say they don't, like, because this is like self-help-ish, do people ever say they don't like it? Like, do people ever, I don't know, I don't think that's a thing. Do people do that? That would be mean.
I keep waiting for it. I keep kind of prodding it on social media. Like, if you think the book sucks, just tell me.
Right.
It's okay.
You're ready
but,
for it.
But it hasn't happened. But, you know, when you put out a record, if people think it sucks, they'll tell you.
That's true.
For sure.
Right.
So.
That's a weird thing to think about. Like, you know, Kristen and I do the website and the podcast and all of this. And I know that was a really big deal for us when we started doing it, like putting yourself out there and how people will react. And you sort of just have to swallow it, the pill, and go like, it is what it is and roll with it. But yeah. Like, would it feel different if it was something said about your book rather than your music?
Not really. I'm pretty ready for like, what I do is not for everybody.
Right.
So some people will likely hate the fuck out of this book, and that's okay.
And that's okay.
It's fine.
Yeah.
What made you want to write this book? What was the key factor that made you say, like, I need to put this book out here?
Wisdom offered me a book deal. I would do articles here and there, and I'd always kind of have notebooks full of little bits of writing I would do. And in the very, very back of my mind, I was like, maybe someday I should write a book. But it really wasn't until Wisdom approached me and was like, hey, do you want to write a book? And I was like, oh, shit. Like,
what was it that made them approach you, though? Was it another piece of writing you had done?
Yeah, I had done an article for, it was either Shambhala Sun or Lion's Roar. .com And one of the ladies that was working at Wisdom, Lydia, her husband just happened to be a big Bottle Rocket fan. And he showed her the article. She showed the article to the powers that be. And they approached me. It was great.
Yeah. So what was the writing process? Did you go chapter by chapter? Did you just kind of start writing and then it worked its way into different chapters? How did that work for you?
Yeah, so when we signed the deal, well, right before we signed the deal, they were like, all right, just send us a sample chapter and like an outline and we'll go from there. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I hashed out like, okay, this is the structure of the book, submitted it. They were like, all right, let's do this. And at that point I was like, oh shit, like I have to write this book now, or there's like contracts in place. And so I quickly figured out, you know, here's how I write on tour, here's how I write when I'm home, and I have to isolate myself from fun, like
from fun,
yeah, lock myself in an office, like at my yoga studio, like away from home, mm-hmm. away from my yeah. dogs, away from TV, and just these are writing hours. So
was there a time it was hard to write though? Was there a time that you were like, didn't write for a month because you just kind of had writer's block or you were sick of it or whatever?
I was pretty good at continuing to write the whole time, but not all of it was good. So there was that, and I just kept taking into place. There was Josh, who's one of the head editors at Wisdom. At one of our early meetings, had been like, just give yourself permission to write a shitty draft. And So I was doing that, but then sometimes I would think it was really good, and I would send it over to Rod, and he was like, this is really bad. So that was a process.
How is that? Are you good at taking constructive criticism?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good at it. You know, it was a bit of like initial reaction, like shit.
Yeah.
And then you second guess, like, should I be writing a book at all? But then you know, you power through it, send another draft over. Rod's like, this is better. And then kept going until finally Rod, who I trust very much, would be like, this is good. Or yeah. At least this is not bad. Then that's how we knew it was a go, right?
Yeah. One of the cool things about the book is that there's kind of like this cliff note at the end of each chapter, right? There's, what do you call it, TLDR, too long, didn't read?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whose idea was that?
That was actually all Rod, and I thought it was so fucking funny. He was I was like, it's a really short book anyway, and the chapters are short. And he's like, yeah, but you're underestimating how truly short some people's attention spans are. So if you can just summarize it in like two or three sentences, then the book works for everybody. And so, yeah that was all Rod. I hope we do an audio book someday that Rod would read that section. I think would be
fun. Right. Yeah. Would you read your own audiobook? Would you read the part that you wrote?
Totally.
Yeah.
I just like on GarageBand, like I just learned how to use right now.
Totally.
Now
yeah.
I know how to do it.
Does that mean that we just taught you how to do
something? And then the other really
something?
Cool.
You did. I learned something today.
You learned something on the Mabel Syndrome podcast. That's awesome. The other really cool thing is that at the end of each chapter, there's something you can do. There's like a practice part of each. So each chapter is about, you know, a different part of your life or a different part of what you've learned or some advice you give or whatever. And then there's at the end of the chapter, there's a practice that, you know, that you walk people through, like, this is what you do. And that's really cool too. Was that your idea or again?
Yeah.
Rod?
That was me. That was really, really conscious from the get go. My first thought was, I don't just want to write my story because really, who gives a shit? Like, everybody has a story. Everybody can write a book, and everybody's stories are interesting. But, like, I just didn't feel like just writing a book about myself. It seemed dumb. So I was like, how do I make this book about other people? And so that was my approach. I was like, here's stories from my life to make it relatable, but at the end, like, here's something the reader can take and implement in their own life. And in that way, it's their book. It's not just my dumb story, right?
Well, you're very self-deprecating about your dumb story, but it's actually really fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
It is.
and it's funny because, you know, it's not a memoir, right? It's not like, I was born here and I lived here and then I went here and then I did this. It's not sequential like a memoir or a biography would be. It's kind of like you put little snippets of your life into each different chapter or each different thing. You know, you're really personal about like the losses that you've had in your life. And you talk about how you lost your mom to cancer when you were 16 and then you lost your sister in a car accident. And I'm kind of curious. So you were basically, after that point, I guess, raised by your dad.
Ish. I mean, Ish. By that point, you know, I was, you know, a teenager, so... Yeah, my dad was around and he tried to help as much as he could. Like, I don't want to make it sound like my dad wasn't around. He fully was and always there to support me. But, you know, I was pretty well set on just doing my own thing at that point and just, mm-hmm. you know, not super into advice from adults in my life at that point. I remember a lot of my mom's friends, you know, tried to help out and I didn't really have much time for it. So my dad was still there, but my family kind of became like my friends and band and that kind of stuff.
How did your mom's friends try to help out?
There was one lady in particular who, one of my mom's best friends, she was like a minister at a church, but you know, Wyoming, like red state, and lots of like old conservative type values. And so mm-hmm. this lady was interesting because she was she was willing to do gay wedding ceremonies and stuff like that, and to like mm-hmm. take the aspects of the church she thought were pure and true and kind of like move them away from like the obvious bullshit stuff, like, you know. And so mm-hmm. her, she really tried to implement, like, you know, like, your mom's with God and they're all here with you and that kind of stuff, and like, if you need anything you can come by the church and all that stuff. And my reaction was just like, fuck you. Like, yeah. Fuck off.
Because how old were you at that time?
16, 17. Yeah, yeah, you know, it's like, well, you want to talk to me about God, like, where's fucking God now? My mom just died. Fuck you.
Totally. Well, it's interesting because it's something that I relate to. My best friend died last year and she has a son. And so I struggle with trying to help him and be there for him. But most of it feels like for me, like he, you know, if I talk about his mom or like get emotional in front of him, that's about me. That's not about him. And, you know, and so it's something I struggle with, like, how do I maybe keep her memory alive or support him? It's just him and his dad now. And, you know, I love my friend that passed and I want to keep her memory alive with her son. But then I also have to remember that that's mostly about me. That's not about helping him necessarily. So I try to find ways that I can help him and his dad. And, you know, I don't know. So I just was wondering how, you know, how your mom's friends interacted with you after she passed.
Yeah. It's a tough path, I think, to navigate. And a lot of them were really good at just like, they just kind of gave me space. But I knew mm-hmm. that if I needed something, like we could call on them, or, you know, a lot of them would, especially right after it happened, like cook a lot of meals for our family and bring them over. And that stuff's all really kind and sweet. And like, even the minister friend of my mom's, like, now the relationship's obviously changed. I'm really grateful for what she was trying to do. But, you know, at the time, people are ready to accept what they're ready to accept. And I wasn't ready for that. And maybe that's part of your scenario. You know,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, her son's a lot younger. I mean, you were 16. You were right in the height of like teenage angst and probably very angry. Like that's a whole different, you know, scenario than what I'm dealing with. But and you know, you're also honest in your book about growing up being diagnosed with bipolar. So I'm wondering, when did that happen? When exactly were you diagnosed with bipolar? How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, my mom, I think, was always a bit more in touch with, like, that realm. Like, psychology, but also, like, spirituality. And just, she really thought it was important for us to be in touch with ourselves. So I think as young as, like, 10 or 11, I started going to see a counselor here and there. Mm-hmm. Just because she thought it would be good for me to have someone to talk to. And it was maybe a few years after that, once, like, the green hair starts showing up and the, like, you know, I'm not around as much because I'm off getting sketchy with my friends, that it was like, okay, you're going back to the psychiatrist. And those were the ones who were like, well, maybe he's starting to show some, you know, mood disorders. And that was the first time they suggested that, you know, I might be suffering from depression. After my mom and my sister had passed, I went back one time to the psychiatrist on my own. Mm-hmm. And that's when really they were like, yeah, we're going to call it bipolar disorder and we're going to start putting you on medication. So they put me on Lexapro, which is like a...
And that was one meeting with somebody?
No. It was... it was... I started going back to them.
Right.
What else? They gave me, like, it was like Valium or something like that, because they thought I was like an alcoholic and that if I needed drugs to like ease off of booze. But like, really all that happened was me and my friends just like took them all for fun. And like drank on top of it and were like super fucked up, which is scary in retrospect. And they gave me that, and then they gave me some medication for insomnia, which that was fair. At the time, I couldn't really sleep if I wasn't wasted. But yeah, so I gave that a shot for a while, in like 19, 20 or so. And then quickly it was like, yeah, this doesn't work. I'm still not happy. Like, I guess I'd right. You know.
It's funny.
So then you talk.
I was just going to say, like, it's really interesting with medication because, I, as a young adult, teen, preteen, started suffering from depression out of the blue, like, without any warning signs. And nobody knew what to do with me. And I remember going to the doctor and getting prescribed Paxil. And Paxil is like, I don't know if I'm cutting out right now or not. You guys both look frozen. Can you hear me?
I think you're cutting out. Oh, no. Yeah, you're cutting out.
Yeah, totally cutting out.
Last thing I heard was Paxil.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to say. I'll just keep saying. So being put on Paxil, which is like a drug that they gave to like senior citizens in nursing homes for depression when they had literally like nothing to do but just sit around, and they put me on that at like 16, 17, and it made me just like a complete zombie, because it was just like, this is the new one here, this, give it a shot.
Totally. I feel there's a really real, like, the easy way out, I think, or the safe way out in that field of work is to like give it a solution and throw drugs at it. And, you know, cause everyone wants results. Parents want fast results for make my kid not so sad. So here's drugs. And it's such an easy, fast thing to do. And it's really dangerous in the long run. Right.
Yeah, definitely.
It's yeah. It's hard though. I think, so I'm actually a counselor by trade, and so and for teenagers.
No, I'm fucking with you. No.
That's awesome.
And I have met kids that have really benefited from medication.
Most definitely.
Yeah, and I would say, so something we do talk about on the podcast is we want to get into more mental health stuff and kind of make it more of a norm, or make it more, you know, something that punk rockers or anybody can talk about, right? Like, it doesn't have to be this taboo thing that no one talks about. And Jess is super open and honest about it, and has written about it in blogs that we've posted. And I've been open and honest about it, and how medication has helped me personally. And so it's, you know, it for each different person, it's really unique. But it sounds like in your situation, maybe because you were so young, or for whatever reason, it wasn't something that worked for you when you were young. But do you feel like now, you know, your book is a lot about meditation, obviously, and yoga and that kind of thing. Do you feel like that is almost your therapy now, your medication now, or are you pro medication, anti medication? Kind of, where do you stand on that in your life?
I will take that back. I'll say I do have a lot of friends who have taken medication, and it's worked really, really well for them. And so I do think that there is some value in there. Mm-hmm. I just think, as a general rule of thumb, it seems like it's a pretty quick, like, let's throw some drugs at it and see what happens. Yeah. Like, you know, of course, human beings are a lot more complex than that. And I don't think it should be such a quick thing that they go to as a solution. It should really be like, all right, we're going down this checklist. Does this work? No, does this? And then like, okay, maybe let's consider some drugs. But so I wouldn't say I'm anti-medication at all. I would mm-hmm. just say I think that they're a little too fast to throw that at the problem. For me, I mean, honestly, the further I've gone into this like yoga and meditation journey, and the more I've like connected with myself, it's not that I don't still get depressed, of course I do. It's just I'm so much One, it happens way less. Mm-hmm. And two, when it does happen, I just have a lot of tools to help me go through it and then disconnect. And I've felt what I need to feel, and now I can move forward. And I think, like, if we could teach this stuff in junior high and high school, probably a lot less kids running around, you know, popping Lexapro or
do you think it's kind of the mindfulness? I mean, mindfulness is something that comes up in your book a lot, like kind of maybe giving a name to your feeling or being in the moment and being like, I'm sad and it's okay and it's time to move forward. You know, one of the things you talk about in your book a lot is like not dwelling on the past, right? And that's something I personally struggle with a lot, is I'm always reliving the past, you know? And it's, I wish I could, you know, there's people say you can't change the past, you don't know what's going to happen in the future, so be present in the moment. And that's something you talk a lot about in your book. How did you learn that?
Now you froze up a little.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Be present in the moment.
Mindfulness. Yeah, be present in the moment. Yeah. How did you learn about that? Like, what was it that really made that stick with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially in, like, really simple, basic meditation practices, you're just like, here's one breath, and here's the next breath, and then here's the next breath, and you start to train yourself, like, okay, my mind is going to, like, well, what if this happens? And you're like, well, that's not happening. Here's another breath. Or you start to get stuck on things that already happened, and you're like, that's not happening right now either. Here's another breath. And and just, like, breath by breath, you start to work your way back, and you have these moments of just clarity where you're like, oh, this is my natural state. This is where I'm actually supposed to live, is this one breath. And it's such a huge relief when you feel it for even just a fraction of a second. All of a sudden, and you understand, like, more of my life can be like this.
Yeah.
So you want to work toward that, right?
For sure. And you actually went to India. When was it that you went to India to study?
Oh, I just got back. I was...
For your second time or your first time?
First time.
Oh, okay.
That was the 40th country I've ever visited.
40th country. You've been there. But you've been to 40 different countries.
I've been to 40 countries on five continents. I'm a lucky, lucky person. Like, that never escapes my grasp of gratitude. I'm a lucky person. But, years ago, I had done my first yoga teacher training, and that was just here in Wyoming. And so I've been a 200-hour registered yoga teacher. And then I wanted to deepen my studies, so I went to Rishikesh beginning of this year. I was there just over a month and completed another 300 hours of training.
Wow.
I'm now 500 hours certified, which I'm very, very proud of. But that was hard. It was.
Yeah, you mentioned in the book that it was hard, and I didn't know what that meant. What was hard about it? Being away from everybody? And
I mean, the thing about it, like, a really intense practice is, it kind of breaks you, like, level by level. For example, if you're doing a lot of, like, really physical yoga, and you have it in your head, like, I'm gonna get my body healthy, and that's gonna help, and then you hit a wall where you're like, my body can't do anymore, or it can't do these things I want it to do, and no matter how hard you try or how hard you wish, it just can't. And so, like, I would actually collapse, and, like, not, like, pass out, but, like, my arms couldn't hold me up anymore, and I would just fall on the ground and just start crying.
Yeah.
And I would be like, well, shit, you know, I'm trying so hard. I'm up at 5 in the morning. I'm fucking chugging salt water and throwing up to, like, clean out my organs with these ancient yogic techniques. Yeah. Like, I'm eating all the right food. I'm doing yoga for 5 or 6 hours a day. Like, what the fuck? Like, why can't I keep up?
Yeah.
And so you really start to, like, doubt yourself and get down on yourself, and then all of a sudden something breaks. Mm. And then you're like, oh, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter if I achieve, like, anything. I'm doing this right now, and that's enough.
Yeah.
So constant roller coaster between, like, I'm kicking ass and yeah. I am the worst.
Right. So. Interesting. But then at the end you feel like you made it through, and that makes it all that much more worthwhile, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely. Like most things in life, the challenge itself brings the greatest rewards, right?
Yeah. You know what? It's this just a little personal aside, but my thing with yoga has been that my very first yoga class I took in, like, 2001, I think, and it was the most amazing class with the most amazing teacher that I just... You know, when you have a teacher that just makes you feel, like, warm and fuzzy inside, and I don't know how else to explain it, but it's just like the class is good, the physical movements are good, but also the energy you get from the teacher is good, and I've been on a quest to find that for the past fucking 17 years, and I can't find the same teacher. Like, I can't find a class that makes me feel as good as that class did, and it's like, I keep trying different, because I live in Boston, so I have yoga at my disposal everywhere. So I, yeah. You know, I keep going to different classes. I keep trying to find different places, and I can't find that class that makes me feel like that did.
Yeah, well, there's, you know, I think there's a really deep lesson to be learned there about, The actual magic of yoga comes from inside of you, right? And mm-hmm. and no teacher in the whole universe can ever actually make that for you. And even though those certain teachers might have held the space in a right way that made it really easy for you to access mm-hmm. this, fact is it came from inside of you, right? Mm. And so if you go into every class, anywhere you go, and you're like, I'm going to take at least one positive thing from this class, even if it's the worst fucking class ever, like, you'll chip away and you'll come a little closer to accessing that inside yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then after a while, you're like, okay, I can do some of this on my own.
Yeah. And so you own your own studio now in Laramie?
I do. I own two studios, one in Laramie and one in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Okay. And what do you do when you're on the road with Teenage Bottle Rocket?
My wife helps out a lot. We're pretty lucky. We, you know, we're both musicians, we're both yoga teachers, and so we get to spend, when I'm not on tour, like, so much time together. We just work together and run the businesses together. It's awesome. It's the best.
That is awesome. But then, I don't know. I can't imagine working with my husband. I think that would be a little tough. So, but then I guess you get a break because you get to go on the road, so...
Yeah.
So totally. Maybe that's good. And speaking of her, I wanted to ask, so you have a baby on the way.
We do.
When is the baby due?
Baby is due August 11th. It's our first kid. I'm super stoked.
Yeah. Do you know the gender?
We don't. I think we might be finding out tomorrow, but I'm not sure.
Oh, so you are going to find out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have two kids, and I didn't find out with the first, and that was really cool. And then the second one I did find out about, but yeah, that's really exciting. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Very,
yeah.
Very excited.
Yeah. One of the things I was thinking when I was reading your book is you know, you said that you start every day with meditating for 15, 20 minutes or whatever you said. And I was like, I wonder if that's still going to happen when the baby comes.
Yeah, right. And I mean, now it's even more intense. I start my day with like hour and a half of yoga, half hour meditation. So I've got like a solid 2-hour routine.
Oh my goodness.
That starts at 3 or 4 in the morning. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just going to roll with whatever happens. Maybe just like strap the baby to my chest and go through my yoga anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you could do downward dog with the baby in a Bjorn, right?
Yeah, it'd be great.
Totally. Are you nervous about having your first kid?
No.
No?
I'm actually not. I have not felt nervous this entire time. I have like a really deep sense of ease about the whole thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's just the right time and the right partner, and I don't know. I think she's going to be... What's that?
Yeah.
I was going to say, she'll be a really great mom.
Well, that eases a lot of concerns, obviously. Yeah. What about touring? Have you thought about, like, if you're going to be on the road for a certain amount of time? Like, do other guys in the band have kids? And do you, you know?
Ray's got a son, Milo, who's 11 now. Mm-hmm. And so... You know, years and years ago, we kind of had that first, like, okay, what's going to happen now that there's a kid in the Bottle Rocket family? And it didn't really change much at all. Bottle Rocket, in the last couple years, since Brandon passed away, I think we've been really conscious about, we don't want the whole thing to feel like a job. Mm-hmm. We only want to do things that are really fun for us, and so it's meant already we've scaled back our touring a bit, and we do more like we'll fly somewhere for 4 days, do a few shows, come home, and so it's already not like the old days when we'd just be in the van for 3 months at a time or however long. Like, I think we've got a pretty good balance, do 1 or 2 weekends a month and probably just keep doing that.
Yeah.
Bring the baby with me once he's old enough to, you know.
Yeah. We were just talking, we interviewed Trevor Keith a couple weeks ago, and he had some great stories about, his kids are older now. They're like in their, you know, early 20s or something. But
yeah, they're off in college. It's crazy.
Yeah. He was telling us that he has all these pictures of his kids sleeping during the Warped Tour, you know, like behind, like they're crazy music going on, and his kids like sleeping in a stroller, you know.
Yeah.
And then he said he set up the very back of the tour bus. There was like a, you know, one of the a playpen or a whatever back there. And that's just what they did. And actually Jessica and I know Tina a little bit, his wife. And, you know, she just has all these funny stories about taking the kids on the road when they were really little. So,
yeah.
So that's awesome. And one of the things we actually noticed in your book is all the little hidden punk titles.
You're the first interview to mention that.
Nice.
Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
The publisher did not get that at all.
They're like, why is this chapter Walk the Walk? Or why does this chapter Everything Sucks? Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought that was just a nice little nod, you know.
Of course. Yeah. We appreciated it. Yeah. We totally caught that and loved that. And you did mention, actually, because Trevor's a friend of ours and we were, you know, love him and respect him so much. And you mentioned that you sent a copy of the book to him.
Yeah, I think he has a blurb in the book somewhere.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Well, we got a really early copy.
Oh, yeah, you got the advanced copies. Yeah.
Totally.
On the actual published version, he's got a blurb where I don't remember exactly what it says, but it's very nice and supportive.
Yeah.
He's a nice, supportive, awesome guy.
Yeah. Yeah, we love Trevor. Is there a band that you haven't toured with or that you haven't played with that you really want to?
Oh, boy. Not too much of bands that are, like, still going. Like, I think most of the bands we really love, we've at least done some shows with. I always say my, you know, aside from the Ramones, obviously, Rudimentary Peni is one of my favorite bands. And as far as I know, they're still alive. If they would ever, like, crawl out and do even just one show in England, I wouldn't even care if we got to play it. Just to see that band would be super awesome.
That's awesome. And I saw you guys on the Warped Tour just a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah.
And I thought one of the interesting things, so, you know, you just mentioned Brandon a minute ago, and you talk about him most in chapter 14, and chapter 14 is that, like, I think the main point that I got of it was shut off your brain so your heart can speak, so you can hear your heart speak. And I thought that was really cool. Like, just shut off what's going on in your head and just kind of follow your heart. And you talk about the band and making that decision and how Brandon always kind of went with what he believed in and how, where his heart took him. And I think that was a really cool way to talk about him and what you learned from him. I thought that was really touching.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that was a tough chapter to write, I think. But it was also one chapter that the first go through, I sent it over to Rod, and he immediately wrote back after reading it, like, that is the best chapter of the book. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And well, that's something I have to do, like, because I'm in my head all the time, you know, and a lot of times I have to kind of turn that off and just trust my gut, you know, and go with what my gut is telling me. And then there were two other chapters. Jessica and I'm so bummed that we lost her. So for people listening, we lost Jessica. Like, her connection sucks. She's in the middle. I don't know if you know, but she lives on Vancouver Island in Canada, like, but on the way, like, northern tip of Vancouver Island. She's in the middle of nowhere. So we lost Jessica, but we each picked, like, chapters in the book that meant the most to us personally. And one of mine is food and how food can make you happy, because I'm a stress eater. Like, I'm a sugar stress eater, right? And so I thought that was really good, I guess, that you put that in the book as something like that, to call attention to the fact that a lot of people use food for comfort, and that you don't, that that's not good, and that's not necessarily healthy, you know? And
yeah, I think it's just like any other thing in our life. Like, there is a way to have a really healthy, enjoyable relationship with it. And then there is ways to have not so healthy, enjoyable relationships. And it's like I say in the book, I fucking love food. And, like, there's something really comforting and nice about, like, a good meal. But the difference is just, like, being mindful enough that you're not hurting yourself with this. Like, you're eating enough, you're enjoying it enough, and then you let it go. That's it.
Yeah. What I always talk to kids about is, like, there's short-term things that make you feel good, but that aren't good in the long term, right? Like shopping and eating and all these things, and drugs and alcohol and all these things that make you feel good in the short term but aren't necessarily healthy in the long term. And a little bit of that is probably okay. And we're all, you know, we can all have indulgences and things that make us feel good in the short term. But if it becomes a problem, if you're relying on it all the time, or if it's causing huge problems for you in the long run, right? So
absolutely.
Yeah. Anyways, well, again, we lost Jess, and I know she had a lot of questions for you, so I'm super bummed about that. But one of the things we do like to end with is, do you have any favorite punk rock ladies? Like, ladies in the punk rock scene that are really killing it?
Ladies, I mean, outside of, obviously, my wife, who, bass player.
Is she a punk rocker?
Oh, yeah. She plays in a band called Oh My Snare. They just had their second record, their second full length out last year on Say 10 Records. They totally shred.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. I didn't realize that. I know she's a yogi.
Yeah.
And and that you guys met at Pooza, maybe?
Yep.
Okay, but I didn't.
Bass player, even.
That's like, amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, obviously, her number one. I'll also say that the ladies in Bad Cop, Bad Cop put out one of my favorite records of the year last year.
Yeah.
That thing just totally shreds.
Yeah. Yeah. Jessica and I were in the music video that they put out. We're good friends with those ladies. They're so awesome. Like, they can rock and they're nice and they're awesome.
Yeah.
Are you guys working on, you just put out an album, Stealing the Covers. Are you working on new music?
We are writing. Yeah, for sure.
Sweet.
Always writing.
Yeah.
And, we'll do a record in the near
future. Do you all live in Wyoming?
Oh, no, no.
Okay.
Me and Ray both live in Laramie, but then Cody lives in Denver, Colorado, and our drummer lives up in Edmonton, Alberta.
Yeah. So do you write, like, send things to each other, or are you guys going to get together and do some work in a studio?
A little of both. Usually, like, if Ray or Cody has a new song, they'll sort of demo it on GarageBand, which now I also know how to use. But and then they'll just email it over, and then when we get together, we'll kind of hash out all the details. Also, like, sometimes if we're on the road, if we have some extra time at soundcheck, we'll kind of screw around with some new tunes and work on them that way. So.
Yeah. Do you have any big shows coming up? Are you doing any, like, spring or summer festivals?
Festivals. I'm drawing a blank on festivals, but we are heading to Texas in a few days on a headlining tour. Then some Wyoming, Colorado shows, then Costa Rica. Back to Europe in the summer. We got some stuff. We're announcing more stuff, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, good. And then I assume you'll take a little block of time when the baby comes.
Just the perfect amount of time.
Yeah, paternity. Yeah. Like, what's the punk rock paternity leave, you know, policy, I wonder?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like 4 weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Miguel. Thank you so much for being a guest. And it was really kind of you to spend this much time with us.
Thank you guys so much. And thanks for, you know, the circle of scheduling with this. I'm happy we finally figured it out.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.